We're going to call the Judiciary Committee to order in work session at 1:45 p.m. on the 21st day of the month. We're teleconferencing. We just called it to order in work session. Present, Representative Green, Representative Cott, and myself, Representative Porter. It's a work session because we don't have a quorum, but we can certainly take testimony. And I'm sure that we'll be getting more members as the time goes along. We've apologized for being late again, but the floor takes precedence, so we have to do that before we get back down here. The first bill that we're going to take, which is being teleconferenced, and 99% of the testimony that is indicated, people who want to testify, is concerning NSB 178, the nuisance bill. For the benefit of those on the teleconference and those here in the room, we certainly want to hear everybody's testimony, but I want to make sure that we're all on the same page when we start. The bill that is in front of us is the Senate version as amended on the floor of the Senate 2 days ago, I believe. Some, I think, rather significant amendments have been made to this bill, and you may want to consider those if you are perhaps reading an earlier version of the bill. Yes. One of the concerns that I have heard expressed considerably is that it would be difficult for an individual or a group to know of a problem that may be emanating from a particular permit or license that was not issued as a result of a public hearing. One of the amendments made on the Senate floor that is in the bill that we are considering now is a provision that this prohibition against action would not accrue to any permit or license that had been not issued as a result of a public hearing. So if the permit or a license had not had a public hearing in its normal process for authorization and issuance, this provision would not apply. There was a concern about nuclear waste, and nuclear waste has been stricken from anything that would come under this provision also. And that the BARDA action applies to occupation, structures, and acts. In other words, those specific items that the permit would be issued to allow. The best analogy, I guess, that I've used to everybody that I've spoken with on this bill, which has been a lot of people, if, for example, a veterinarian clinic was issued a license to have a veterinarian clinic, they couldn't be sued for having a nuisance if the concern was that veterinary clinic should not be where it is. If, on the other hand, they let their dogs out at night from the clinic and they bathe at the moon and disturb the neighbors, that is actionable, and of course that isn't what their license was issued to them to do. So that's the analogy that I've used, and it has been told to me that what this bill means, and I'm certainly proceeding along those lines. So with that in mind, I would like to first go get an indication that the individual in Anchorage that has a desire to testify has a time problem. So we will go to Anchorage and ask if Richard Foley is ready to testify.
Mr. Chairman, this is Richard Foley. I would like to testify on the Senate Bill 173 on the health care. If that's not on the agenda, then, or if that's not up now, then perhaps I won't be able to testify.
I'm sorry that the indication on the slip is 178. It is on the agenda, but I'm guessing it'll be an hour and a half or so before we get to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's the bill that I want to testify on, and so I guess I'll just pass, and I'm sorry I won't be able to. I've got another engagement this afternoon. I'm sorry I won't be able to address you. I guess that's the way it goes sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, I will rotate then through the various teleconference sites that we have, which include Valdez, Anchorage, Kodiak, Sitka, and Ketchikan, and a full house here in Juneau. So I will alternate through all of these lists, and we'll start here in Juneau with Chip Toma. I would like everyone, please, to try to limit their testimony to 2 minutes.
You say 2 minutes, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Chairman, for the record, my name is Chip Toma. I'm testifying in opposition to SB 178 amended Senate. This legislation was brought about because of the suit which was filed against the Alaska Pulp Corporation, 1SI92257CI, Edwards versus Alaska Pulp. And this legislation is designed to protect the Sitka pulp mill, even if their permit is violated, which it has been, of course, for the last two decades. So far as known, there's no legislation in any state that has such similar limitations. The bill is probably unconstitutional because it denies due process. It denies due process to property owners. It constitutes a taking of private property rights, and it may well make the state liable for the cost of injury to property caused by permitted activity. I direct your attention to the letter in your packet from Lloyd Miller of Sanofsky Chambers. Mr. Miller, of course, is the lawyer of record for many of the litigants on the Exxon Valdez case. SB 178 uses permits to immunize polluters from liability, and that should not occur. The U.S. Supreme Court, the Sixth and Ninth Circuit Courts of Appeals from Ohio and California have found against this type of legislation. And the most significant piece of legislation, or the most significant case, is International Paper versus Ouellette. 1987, the U.S. Supreme Court held that a private nuisance claim against a paper mill is not preempted by the fact that the mill operated under a federal water pollution permit. That's the end of my testimony. I'd like to submit to the committee a memo from Mr. Jim Clark to Attorney General Cole on March 24th, which lays out the bases for this legislation, and also a recent article from the Sitka Sentinel entitled, "The EPA Says the State is Much Too Easy on the APC Mill in Sitka." And it's my prediction that the EPA will take a very strong and significant interest in this legislation.
Thank you, Chip. As happenstance has it, the next person on the list here is Juno, and since Jim mentioned that he's got a memo coming up, we'll ask if Jim Clark can come forward just a minute.
Mr. Chair, if I may address the committee, my name is Dave Matthews. I represent the Alaska Forest Association, and I would simply like to say in support of Senate Bill 178, Jim Clark is speaking on behalf of the Alaska Forest Association.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. First off, with respect to the philosophy of the bill that's in front of us, I just want to explain what it does and doesn't do. We are not, as in some of the cases that involve this constitutional issue, providing a wholesale exemption from nuisance. What we're doing is we are redefining nuisance to talk about what is and what is not a reasonable use of property. And we are saying that after someone goes through the public permitting process with public hearings, notice, probably a lawsuit about whether a state actually entered a or provided a permit, that after that, a nuisance suit against the permittee for doing what the permit allows is constitutional. It's reasonable. And let's just think about it for a minute in terms of what you, the legislature, do. You have spent a good deal of a number of years, as has the Congress of the United States, defining property rights. Who gets to do what with their property, including a lot of environmental regulations and restrictions in which people have been told you can't use your property to do X, Y, Z. You have to protect what you do on your property in terms of air and water and solid waste. And the courts have found that, those are reasonable restrictions on property. They say that you can't be compensated for those kind of things under the takings clause of any constitution, Alaska or the federal constitution, because it is reasonable for the legislature to tell you to do those things. Now what we're dealing with in this legislation, with this redefinition of nuisance, is the other side of the coin. If it is reasonable for the legislature to be able to require environmental regulations and permits, then it's a reasonable use of your property as long as you meet the permit requirements, if you do what the permit requires. That's all that this legislation says. Anyone who pollutes beyond what is in their permit, the same rules of common law nuisance continue to apply. And that's why, with respect to some of the cases people have brought up on this constitutional issue, they deal with wholesale exemptions from all nuisances. This statute does not do that. This also gets to the business that so many people have raised about, this is going to cost the state money, plus the state will get sued instead. The only theory in which somebody would be able to raise an argument is on inverse condemnation. And the inverse condemnation statutes have been brought basically by the timber and mining people that I represent to say that you can't bring these environmental statutes. It's unreasonable taking of my property. And they have uniformly lost. So I can't tell you that someone will bring an inverse condemnation action against the state of Alaska if it passes. They probably will. But I think that the issue here turns on The threat of inverse condemnation has never stopped either the Congress or the state of Alaska's legislature from passing more restrictive environmental regulations all the time. I don't know why we start with this particular thing that provides some limitation. So it seems that, as you pointed out initially, Mr. Chairman, if it goes through the vetting process, the public knows about it, has a chance to comment on it. We've had a permit here in Juneau that's been through 4 years of permitting. It will be appealed. The groups opposed have already said they'll appeal it. It'll be appealed administratively. It'll be appealed to the state court for the issuance of the city and state permits. And having done all that, should, if they meet all 180 conditions in their city permit, should they still be sued under common law nuisance, I'd call it harassed, for meeting what the permit allows. And that is the purpose behind this. There have been some concerns expressed. I did just want to pass on to you for your consideration three improving amendments.
Let me ask you to summarize, please.
To summarize, three improving amendments I'd ask you to consider at line 11, just before the word statute, if you add the word valid, so it reads a valid statute or regulation. At line 14, it said a court order or judgment instead of the word decision. We've urged these three amendments. And the other amendment would be on the back page 2, section 2, line 9, strike the word real before property so that this applies to all property. And this comes, I had a discussion this morning with some folks in the AG's office who felt that this would improve the bill. And I agree. So from the Forest Association's point of view, we'd urge those 3 minutes. And thank you for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Are there any questions?
Yes,
Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Clark, just a couple now that I've got a copy of the amended version. But in your estimation, through the permitting and public process through the vehicle public hearings, due process would, in your estimation, would have been served?
Absolutely. This is a very minimalist provision, really. I know there's a lot of excitement, lots of people want to testify, but all we're trying to do is say, from a public policy point of view, the agencies are going to decide what's in the public interest, not the courts. And if we, as a state, tell an agency to take certain action, they take that action, and a court, as it usually does, will decide whether that action was arbitrary and capricious in accordance with law, and the court so finds, that you then can't be bringing these additional lawsuits, which amount to nothing more than harassment for pursuing somebody for doing what their permit already allows.
Okay, thank you. And as a follow-up, if I might, Mr. Chairman, and I'll yield to my colleague. On the first change, can you comment as to the reason for that change, a valid statute? I mean, not all statutes are valid. I didn't think we did anything erroneous.
I would agree, but as I said, there were some concerns in the AG's office. I went up and talked to them. They would feel more comfortable with that in there. I don't think it changes anything, but I don't have any problem putting it in. And so that's why we're for that. If that would make people feel happier, we're for it.
Are there invalid statutes?
Doesn't an
invalid statute become a non-statute?
I'm finding it hard to argue with you at this point because I agree with you, but I'm just, we move it nonetheless.
Thank you.
I'll reserve comment. Representative Davidson and then Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Clark, shame on you. I'm surprised that with your legal training, you're saying just because we want to change a definition here that it's no big deal. Now, you've been a lawyer long enough to know that redefinitions are, in fact, a very big deal. So my question is, you talked about, in regards to some of this former legislation that your people are going through, that you uniformly lost. How do you explain the uniformly lost aspects of the cases that you've lost and why?
Well, the first time this morning I got asked that question, I explained because I was not the lawyer on the side that was taking it up, and that was too good then as it is now. But the theory of inverse condemnation has not been bought by the courts. And the people that have brought the inverse condemnation actions, of which apparently some are concerned, have been the people usually that I represent after a new environmental statute's come down. Somebody passes a new Clean Air Act, like you're about to do, and somebody says, that's too much, it burdens my property too much, and they'll file an inverse condemnation action. Those cases haven't won. And so if the state's worried about somebody filing a lawsuit because of this limited protection we're giving to a permit holder who meets the conditions of his or her permit, I'm saying I can't guarantee you someone will bring suit. I can tell you that if you just look at the cases, the outcome is pretty certainly a loser, and it might happen once, and then it won't happen again.
Representative Norman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Clark, in a situation where... In a situation where there are true damages and where the damaged party did, was damaged by an individual or a company or whatever, did meet the permit requirements, how can that person go out and collect and be made whole if you can't go back to the state for authorizing the permit?
If you'll pardon me, and I just to put it this way, the devil of this is in the details, because presuming damage from a permitted activity is pretty hard. Let's take a Clean Air Act type situation. In order to get a permit under the Alaska statute, there's several things out there. Number one, you have to show you're going to meet primary and secondary standards. Now, primary and secondary ambient air standards, primary standards are with respect to human health. Secondary standards are with respect to vegetation and wildlife. You have to, under the Alaska statute and the federal statute, make that showing. Under Alaska law, we have a nuisance provision right in the regulations, 18 AEC 50.110, that requires you, before you get a permit, to make that showing. All of those have margins of safety and error factors plugged in. You know, the big argument we've been in with Mr. Davis in the years past on 10 to the minus 5th and 10 to the minus 6th, those are safety margins built into these statutes and into these requirements that pretty much say that we, as agencies in the public interest, are going to make sure the public at large and individuals within that public are not going to be harmed. So to start out with the proposition that somebody's damaged to begin with is pretty hard when the applicant has to make those kinds of showings. And that's why this kind of legislation is justified, because having gone through that process, made those showings, done all that, you can only say that bringing an action at that point is harassment for harassment's sake.
If I might follow up, Mr. Chairman, it just, you know, maybe that what your situation you talk about applies in many cases, but like, it's not hard to imagine a situation where a person's property really is damaged. You know, it can be shown by their inability to sell at a price they used to be able to provide why they sold the property at. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's true damage in which somebody should be made to pay. And if the state's going to take the responsibility on by permitting and allowing, you know, a corporation to get off the hook, then the state should pay. But somebody should be able to make this party whole.
The same argument, though, I don't mean to be argumentative, I'm just trying to respond to you well. And that is this, that people who get burdened with environmental regulations have their property demonstrably diminished. In other words, if you can't cut certain timber anymore, if there's certain things that you have to do to provide water protection and air protection, that diminishes the value of your property. And we have decided, and the courts have decided, that does not give rise to just compensation. And so, again, what we're trying to do here is very narrow. It's the other side of the coin. It says, if we can decide that that's reasonable, that we're going to put these limitations on your property, and we're not going to compensate you because it's reasonable that you have to do this, and then it seems also it seems logical to say that the legislature can determine that it's reasonable to provide protection to those people to the extent they're living up to the permit. Let me give you one other reason why this is good public policy. This is going to encourage, it's going to be another factor on why people will live within their permit conditions if they can get this immunization by doing so. It's going to be just another carrot in this case, not a stick, but it creates a carrot that will convince people that they better stay within their permit limits, and it will help the state of Alaska make sure that people, not make sure that they do, but it will give people a reason for doing so that will help in making sure these environmental laws are met.
Thank you. Before I go on, let me recognize the Lieutenant. Here I go again.
Lieutenant.
Oh, he should be a lieutenant, but actually he's a representative. Jerry Maggie from Craig has joined us, and the next question goes to Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the pencil or something, there's notes at the top of this modification that you suggested, and it says that the proposed change is suggested by Charlie Cole. Does that mean that with these modifications that Attorney General, it's contagious, would be in favor of this bill?
No, I don't want to say that at all. I think that he is reserving judgment as far as I know, and I don't want to speak for him, but all I know is that these three changes would make it better as far as they're concerned. Okay. But I don't want to speak for them, and I think that they're reserving judgment.
And then if I might, this may be asking you to go beyond your duties, but there has been apparently some differences of opinion between your legal position and Attorney General Cole's. Could you tell us what the gist of those differences might be?
There were several cases that the Attorney General is very legitimately was worried about as in being involved here that could impact this. The point with respect to those cases is they are situations in which wholesale exemptions from nuisance were provided. In other words, I would agree that you can't say
that you could not exempt everybody from all nuisance actions without creating problems. That's why we were very careful here not to do that. There is no blanket exemption here. It is an exemption only after there's been a permit issued and following a public hearing. In other words, we've gone through this process and you are meeting the terms of your permit. And the reason why we think that's reasonable is because the courts have said it's reasonable to require property holders to do that without paying them any compensation. And so if that is considered reasonable by the courts, it's got to be constitutional to say we're going to exempt those people from being subject to lawsuits, because what is a nuisance after all, other than an unreasonable interference with property? And if the courts are saying you're reasonable by allowing these permits, then I think it follows logically that you are that the legislature is acting within reason to exempt people who are using their property as the legislature and the permit agent have described.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Clark. I'm informed we have someone in Kenai Soldado with time constraint, too, that we hopefully haven't already expired. Is Peter Eckhart ready in Kenai Soldado?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me, Chairman?
Yes, we can. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Peter Eckhart. I am an attorney in Soldado, and it should be known that I represent one of the attorneys representing Larry Edwards in the nuisance action that's been filed against the Sitka Pulp Mill. I also represent a local native corporation which is very concerned about the passage of this bill. And I would like to respond very briefly to what I hear Mr. Clark saying about the public hearing aspect of this bill. I understand it. Mr. Clark argues that we can substitute constitutional protections and the ancient protection of nuisance, which has gone on for centuries, for the public hearing process, because essentially what's good for the gander is good for the goose. It's sort of the tit-for-tat bill, as I understand it. The problem with that is twofold. One, the level of hearing that goes on for something like the Sitka Pulp Mill before we decide to take their property rights is immeasurably greater than the level of hearing that goes on before we decide to take the property rights of somebody whose property is injured by the nuisance that the pulp mill or somebody else creates. If the state wants to go through the process of giving every single individual the same level of hearing to protect their property rights as it gives the mill or any other would-be permittee, then it's probably okay. But we're not going to do that. We obviously can't. And so the logic of Mr. Clark's argument is fatally flawed, because we simply cannot give the same level of public protection, of public hearing, to private individuals as we can to somebody who wants to engage in industrial production creating a nuisance. The second thing is that the legislature itself has found through one of the bodies that it's constituted, and that is the Citizens Oversight Council on Oil and Other Hazardous Substances. That body found in 1993 that in a report that it gave to the legislature in 1993, that the public hearing process is fatally flawed, that the research that they did indicated that the public has insufficient input and impact on regulations and on decisions made by agencies. And therefore, there's already been a finding by the legislature itself that the public hearing process does not work. So that's a second problem with Mr. Clark's argument. To claim that we can substitute the public hearing process in this situation is simply wrong and doesn't fit with the findings that the legislature itself has made, nor does it fit with the level of protection that the legislature or any other administrative body is willing to give to private citizens who may be injured as a result of a permitted nuisance. The last thing I'd like to point out to you is that the bill as it now sits would exempt nuclear waste, would basically say nuclear waste is bad enough for us to take out. But, of course, it's okay to have benzene, apparently. It's okay to pollute with PCBs and dioxins and any other substance. But for some reason, nuclear waste is worse. I don't understand that. And thank you. That's my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Richard. I understand that Chuck Robinson is also in Kenai Soldado.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Please,
my name is Chuck Robinson. I live in Soldotna. I'm also an attorney. I'm also one of the attorneys, or in the firm of the attorney that represents Larry Edwards in the APEC case in Sitka. The matter I'd like to speak to concerning this bill is problem that it creates for the taking of property rights from citizens who have a claim for nuisance, and a private nuisance claim at that. The property interest that we're talking about here that the courts have defined is the actual legal claim itself for being able to bring a claim against a polluter for creation of a private nuisance. And there is law in several East Coast jurisdictions already from Supreme Courts in those states that have pretty much said that it's not constitutional for a state to take away the ability of a private person to bring a private nuisance claim, particularly in a non-public purpose, because once that property is taken, then you're not abiding by the constitutional provision, which is that there can be a taking as long as there's just compensation. In this particular instance, it appears that it would be just flat out unconstitutional because the prohibition against bringing the civil action for private nuisance is not really for a public purpose. We're not, in this instance, according to this proposed legislation, attempting to, for some public purpose, deny the ability of an individual to bring a private nuisance. So therefore, it's very doubtful whether the legislature can, in fact, do what this bill purports to do. The arguments by Mr. Clark, the sort of tit-for-tat arguments in support of the bill, are somewhat misplaced. There's a big difference between placing restrictions on the use of property that the public believes may be harmful and the pursuit of a legal claim because someone's property is harmed. The courts have for generations held that as long as the restrictions on the use of property first go to a health, safety, or welfare measure for the protection of the public and doesn't amount to a total confiscation of the property, then it can be done as a reasonable restriction on property use. However, there's a big difference between that and then denying someone whose property has been harmed the ability to bring a claim for a recompense. And that's the difference I see between what Mr. Clark is saying in support of this bill and the tit-for-tat argument that he makes. If this really is truly a definitions bill, and that what the bill attempts to do is just to define what a private nuisance means, then it seems to me that all the legislature should do, if that's the case, is just, as has been suggested in the line 8 on the second page of this bill, is just define what a nuisance means. Even at that, and nothing more. But the attempt to take away legal claims of private individuals is a serious constitutional problem because this taking of the property right, which is the claim itself, is not for a public purpose. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robinson. I'd like to go to Sitka now and start with a couple of the people there and ask if Matthew Donahue is ready.
Yes, your evening, Mr. Chairman.
Loud and clear.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to say something on this. I'd like to state that my interest in this bill is primarily one of a civil libertarian rights and a property owner right. I don't seek to fight with the mill on this, but I consider this a limitation on my right to redress through the courts any damage to my property from any cause whatsoever. I note that in the bill it doesn't say the ALP mill here. It's talking about anything in general for it's point of law that you're attempting to pass that will restrict my right to due process. And I'm extremely concerned with that. In America, it's already all the justice that you can afford, and this bill would make that amount of justice much less for the average man. I have a hard time understanding your definition of nuisance, and also the bill assumes that all permit practices in the state of Alaska are fair and honest or whatever definition that they're done correctly and that they will always be judged so. I'd like to submit that often, and I'm not trying to criticize this legislature or this administration. I just would state that there have passed and there will be in the future unfair permitting processes where citizens are wrongfully damaged. And this bill, this legislation, would restrict the real ability of that citizen to recover. And I think it is a direct constitutional challenge to due process. And that's what I'd like to state. Also, I'd like to state that the city of Sitka has not taken a position on this in any public comment or meeting. And I, I'd like to, in case it has. Once again, I'm not against the pulp mill. I just want to protect my own rights, due process, and to protect my property. And I'm extremely uncomfortable with this bill.
Thank you, Matthew. Let's get one more in Sitka. We have the most people to testify from that location. Is Don Mueller there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. My name is Don Mueller. For the last 17 years, I've been a business person here in Sitka. For 2 years before that, I was a chemist at the ABC Mill. I have to admit that the pulp mill attorneys and executives are very clever and very cunning. SB 178 is a very clever and cunning bill. And Robin Taylor, if he is not telling the truth, is also very clever for getting the bill as far as it has come. If he is telling the truth, it would appear that he is simply a lackey for the mill. I suspect he is very clever, however. But in a democracy, we expect more of our leaders. In a democracy, we expect more of industry executives who claim to be members of the small community in which they live. These people are all supposed to be more than just clever and cunning. In a democracy, the rights of the individual are supposed to be as important, maybe more important, than the rights of a single industry, especially an industry that has a long, long history of violating laws and regulations. The bill being considered today is obviously written because the pulp mill in Sitka doesn't like yet another right of an individual, yet another right of the community in which it is allowed to operate. The pulp mill wants to have its own rules. The pulp mill believes that the rights of the mill are more important than the rights of any individual or community. I ask that you vote against this bill in the interest of democracy and the rights of the citizens of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Next, I'd like to return here to Juno, and I believe the name is Chuck Utberger.
Very good.
Is that
only a corporal? My name is Chuck Ockberger, and I'm the director of the Alliance for Juno's Future. There you go. Try again. Chuck Ockberger, director of the Alliance for Juno's Future. We were founded 4 years ago to go through the fairly simple and straightforward process of opening a gold mine here called the AJ. This has become a career opportunity for many of us. Very few things, I believe, in the state of Alaska have undergone the amount of public scrutiny, hearings, and testimony that we've gone through. We're reaching the culmination of that, hopefully tonight, with the final, I believe, are like 12 to 14 hours of public testimony. This has been a long and arduous process, and you could not convince Echo Bay, I'm sure, who spent over $100 million so far, that there's no value to these permits. There should be, at some point in time, a point to stop and say, okay, we're meeting these laws, we're meeting these regulations. If we could look into the hearts of individuals and find out whether they were truly injured or truly distraught by this, or whether this is just a ploy and harassment, there'd be no need for something like this. But we can't. And all too often today, the legal recourse leads to merely harassment. Echo Bay, and we've seen in the newspaper comments from people against the mine that they aren't going to get any kind of satisfaction even in state courts. They obviously have to go to federal courts because the state courts are bought off. This is absurd, and it's something they have to face. And it's an ongoing process, and for business in Alaska, it's very, very difficult to continue it. We speak in favor of the bill, and we hope that we can get this mine going and a lot of other businesses. Thank you.
Question, Chuck, if you don't mind, Representative Davidson?
Right. Mr. Ockberger. Mr. Ockberger, your statement that the courts are bought off in the state of Alaska, could you give us some material or personal experience or facts that would indicate that?
No, I was saying I was editorial in the paper by an individual who was saying that there would be no satisfaction from the courts in Alaska.
Oh, so we
have to go to a
you're just quoting the individual.
Right.
I think
our courts are wonderful. Of course, she's with the AG's office, so she has a better idea than I do. Thank you.
Chuck, one more, I'm afraid. Representative Cott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can't let you off that easy. Chuck, there was an earlier comment made from another testifier that indicated that the public process and public comments are really something that kind of just goes over our head. We don't pay a lot of attention to it. Can you comment on what you perceive the public process to be and the public comments during this AJ mine permitting process here in Juneau?
I guess
the real question is, how important is the public process and public comments?
I think the public process is extremely important. I think the flaw in the public process situation is what we're facing right now with the AJ. Several times last night it was mentioned that these standards, these conditions are all diluted. What you work at with a public process is making comments and building a compromise in an effort to build a better permit, a better mine. Well, as any of you have tried to strike a compromise with some people, everybody has to give a little. Nobody's perfectly happy with what comes out of it. This is the dilution that we're faced with in these conditions. The conditions aren't exactly what I want, and I'm very certain they're not exactly what the other individuals involved in this thing want. But that's the nature of a compromise. But I don't think you could ever cut out the public testimony. But it has to be there. It helps forge a better process, and it helps forge a better project. As a developer for the last 17 years, I always would deal with the neighbors and talk to them because, you know, it's important that they participate. We've gone a long way, and sometimes I think maybe we go too far, but, and then they're never satisfied.
Thank you.
That it?
Next, I'd like to go to Kodiak, if we can, and ask if Mary Forbes is ready to testify.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Mary Forbes, and I represent the Kodiak Audubon Society, and we oppose the amended version of SB 178. I don't need to repeat what some others have already said. I'd just like to stress that we agree with the gentleman from Soldotna and from Sitka, and I have a lot of concerns about the consequences of this bill, and particularly the constitutional question and whether this would indeed constitute taking by the state and it cost the state a lot more money. And also, we would like to echo the bit about the Citizen Oversight Council finding that the permitting process is already in question, so I think that this bill would do a lot more damage than anything else. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary. Next, we could return here to Juneau and ask if Jamie Parsons is ready to testify. Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 178 as amended. My name is Jamie Parsons. I'm here today only as the President of Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. The State Chamber Board of Directors met here in Juneau on March 18th and reaffirmed its stance on supporting a bill that would clarify the definition of, quote, nuisance. The State Chamber wanted me to convey that by narrowing the definition of nuisance as found in the amended bill, a substantial and unreasonable interference with the use and enjoyment of real property, including water. Senate Bill 178, as amended, will go a long way in reducing frivolous lawsuits and unnecessary litigation and will create a more positive business and development climate for Alaska. Thank you.
Amy, thank you very much. Next, could we go back to Sitka and ask if Valerie Nelson is ready to testify?
Yes, I am. Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
For the record, my name is Valerie Nelson, and I am adamantly opposed to this bill being contemplated by the legislature for many reasons. The main one being that I have an action filed that could be invalidated by the retroactive clause of this bill. It's much the same as changing the rules in the middle of the game. My suit was filed relying on statutes and ordinances as they are now on the books, and I have spent thousands of dollars to fight the expansion of a non-conforming use that has been allowed by the good old boys in Sitka. You people are supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. This action takes the right of people away to protect their properties. In closing, I would like to suggest that you have Mr. Taylor go on a permanent elk hunting trip, maybe to Montana. There are a few good old boys in Sitka that can report on where to hunt. Thank you.
Thank you, I guess. Okay, while we're on a roll in Sitka, is Ron Dick there, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Rather than get into the legal details and nuances of such a legislative act with respect to individual property rights and due process, I'd like to focus my comments on the underlying principles of justice that this act violates. Since this act exempts any polluter from liability if they have the permission of the government, it is absolutely essential that the integrity of the permission or permitting process be untainted. And the fact is that this permitting process is often lacking in integrity and often involves collusion between the permitting agencies and the polluters. It's a fact that APC, Alaska Pulp Corporation, the State of Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, have had numerous private meetings to agree upon acceptable pollution standards. And generally, APC informs DEC about the current level of discharge of specific pollutants, and then DEC writes the standards so that these levels of discharge can be maintained. It's also a fact that DEC often fails to enforce violation of the standards or to enforce their own regulations. And I'm glad that Mr. Clark mentioned the regulation 18AAC 5110, because this is an excellent example of DEC's refusal to enforce their own regulations. In fact, they have refused to enforce that regulation for 20 years, over 20 years, because it was effective 5/26/72. And the Sitka Conservation Society filed an administrative appeal regarding this failure with respect to this regulation 4 years ago. And the appeal was decided in favor of the Sitka Conservation Society in May of 1992. In short, this regulation placed the burden of proof on the polluter to prove that the pollution they create is not injurious to human health or welfare, animal or plant life, or property, or which would unreasonably interfere with the enjoyment of life or property. And DEC still has never enforced this regulation in the past and has not enforced it, in spite of the appeal decision almost 2 years ago. And in April 20, yesterday, the Sitka Sentinel, it was reported that EPA is considering a lawsuit against the DEC because they've been too lenient with the Alaska Pulp Corporation. And now you're considering a bill that disenfranchises the public from seeking legal redress when the state government and corporations collude to circumvent our laws and regulations. So I'm speaking against the bill, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ron. Let's see, Robert Ellis.
Thank you for coming back to me. This is a bad bill. It's further erosion of the public's rights to protect itself from the actions of government and industry. I'll go down through point by point. On line eight, I have a question. Why do you exclude nuclear waste only? What about all the toxic chemicals, that many of which are even more dangerous than radiation? I suggest that you add any toxic elements or chemicals. In regard to public hearings on line 12, as you've heard a couple of people say, the public hearings that we have had here in June in Sitka are often just a facade to make the public anger go away. And what we get is no significant changes in the pre-arrangements that have been made between the mill and DEC. Mr. Clark's mention of 50.110 illustrates the danger in relying on the public review process. Move on to line 15. I don't understand why you have omitted health, physical destruction by chemicals such as acids, and fallout of dirty soot here. And also, why protect only the citizens living in the city? Are rural residents second-class citizens? Sure, it's particularly outrageous. Bill which emphasizes the importance of public participation in hearings, which is a good feature, but penalizes people who didn't attend the meetings or hearings in the past that they thought were to protect them. And this retroactive feature says they were protected, but we're going to take that protection away from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. We could then go to Valdez and see if Nancy Lithko is ready.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for having me hearing. My name is Nancy Lithko. I am president of the Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association. The Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association members are concerned about this bill and ask that you not pass it. We have encountered with the permitting process two problems. First, permits such as air quality are often issued using data provided by the industry. The state's declining income means that DEC and other regulators are going to be able to do less and less independent checking of information provided by industry. More permits may or will be issued under the pressure of economic constraints that may or will lead to damage to personal property. My second concern with the public process is that during the public process, it's very unequal. Industry lawyers meet privately with regulators from the local to the commissioner's level during the permitting process. We do not object to this. In fact, we think it's a good idea that industry have an opportunity to work together with DEC. However, citizens whose property may or will be affected do not have the scientific expertise, lawyers, time, funding, or access to regulators to put forward their position during the permitting process. It is only afterwards, when damage is seen, that they recognize a problem. Often at this time, DEC does not have the money to do the monitoring to determine whether or not a permit is being violated. So the only recourse our members is through the courts, and this bill would deprive them of that opportunity.
Have you concluded, Nancy? Did we lose Nancy? Would you see if you could reestablish it?
Yeah. No, I don't think we have lost the network. Perhaps you can call on your site.
Okay.
I think maybe Jess Sitka.
We have a problem perhaps with Valdez. Let's try one more at Sitka and see if we're still online. Is Susan Strum around?
No, we're down.
What do you have this bit?
I'll give Anchor to call.
Take a in-place at ease for a minute, see if we can get it to the news time. Call the meeting back to order. while they're still trying to establish, we've got someone here in Juneau that's got a time problem also. So I'll ask Steve Burrell if he could come forward and testify. You don't have to flip the switch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Stephen Burrell. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Miners Association. Testifying on behalf of the association, we'd like to be on record in favor of this bill. If an individual or a company is conducting its business within the law, there should be nothing in statute that would encourage third parties to file nuisance lawsuits against the activity. This bill would remove one of the incentives for groups and individuals to file such nuisance lawsuits. By the financial incentive, this bill should decrease the number of suits that are filed to merely harass and stall projects. If fewer nuisance lawsuits result, individual miners and companies will have one less what I would call artificial uncertainties to deal with when trying to develop a project. Lastly, the passage of this bill would provide additional tangible evidence to the international mining industry that Alaska truly wants mineral development and that the state legislature is interested in removing the impediments to reasonable development. Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question for Mr. Burrell. Mr. Burrell, in your own understanding, current definition of nuisance in the statutes, how would you characterize it?
Well, I feel that the current definition is more broad than what this is. This would seem to put some reasonable restrictions on that.
Reasonable in that, how do you mean reasonable?
At this point, if let's say, and I don't want to use a particular example, but if a company has its permits, it has been through the process, and just because someone, for example, does not like that they have to see a particular item, it appears to me, in my estimation, that right now they could still file a suit. Yes, they would not be successful, potentially not successful. But filing of that suit because of a, quote, visual impairment is just another way to harass the project. And when a company has been through the permitting process and has been able to meet all of the hoops, jump through the hoops, which are considerable. Matter of fact, they're so considerable right now, those hoops are, that the international mining industry is looking outside of the United States as we speak. I learned, for example, today that one of the major companies in Alaska is leaving Alaska right now, and they are closing their office. They are going to Latin America.
Was that because of a nuisance lawsuit?
No, it's because of an overwhelming overburden of restrictive legislation, restrictive permitting requirements, and changing this kind of a thing does not make a huge difference to that company or any other company, but it adds to the process of saying Alaska is a place where we would want to expend our money.
So current definition of nuisance is just simply too broad in your understanding or estimation?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I don't know if we're hooked up yet, so I'll continue down in Juneau and ask, I believe it's Jeffrey A. Drosler.
Mr. Chairman, it'd be impossible for you to read my handwriting.
Okay, thank you.
More often than not, I can't even read it. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeffrey Trout. I'm an attorney with First Horton Vintner and Sherrill here in Juneau. And I'm here up here today. I'm not representing anyone except for myself. I'm here to speak against the bill, or against certain provisions of the bill. And I have some written testimony. It's based on the HB 282. But none of the recent amendments to the Senate bill would at all affect my comments on the legislation. Like many people in the legislature, I come at this from the perspective of a conservative Republican. I've been working on behalf of conservative Republican causes ever since I was in law school, and I have a strong support of business. I have a strong support for economic development. Let me tell you what I like about the bill, first of all. I like the idea of statutorily giving a definition to nuisance. I think by increasing the standard to a substantial and unreasonable harm, that you are going to eliminate quite a bit of the frivolous litigation that people are concerned about. And so I support that. But I don't support shifting the economic burden for pollution or other types of nuisances off the person who causes the nuisance and on to the person that doesn't cause it and doesn't benefit from it. I should tell you, in preparation for my testimony, I looked at looked at the Alaska Digest. I didn't do any in-depth legal research, but I did look at how many cases have been decided and published in the Alaska Digest. There's a total of 9. Of those 9, only 2 have occurred since statehood. That leads me to believe, and I don't have any statistics for what might be filed in the district or superior courts, but it leads me to believe that nuisance lawsuits really aren't very much of a nuisance at all. And I think to simply try and eliminate frivolous lawsuits by eliminating all nuisance lawsuits under certain circumstances, you're in effect shooting a cruise missile to kill a mouse. It's really not that big a problem. Nuisance lawsuits, I believe, exist to protect people's private property interests. And when they're used legitimately, they'll encourage the economically efficient use of property. Because if you have to pay for what you do, if you have to pay for pollution or whatever, and it's nonsense to say that because of the permitting process, we're not going to have pollution. We will have pollution. We want to reduce it as much as possible. But frankly, we probably can't afford to have the kind of business practices that would simply eliminate pollution altogether and wouldn't hurt anybody else's property. So the real question, the real issue in this bill is who's going to pay for that? And it seems to me that from conservative economic, you know, for someone who strongly believes in conservative principles and in simple fairness, that the person who causes the problem ought to be the one that pays for it, and they shouldn't be able to pass it off to somebody else. And that's my testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. We have, here in Juneau, we've been responding to people with time constraints, and I know that the next person to testify has one. He just adjourned put at ease a hearing that he was holding. So I'll ask Ab Gross, past Attorney General, to come forward and give his testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Adam Gross, as the Chairman just mentioned. I'm conducting a hearing across the street for the Department of Transportation, so I had to have a bunch of lawyers and witnesses standing by, so I'm going to try to thank you for getting me in. I know some of the people here, but for those who don't, I'm an attorney in this community. I work with the firm of Gross & Burke. I've lived in Juneau for 33 years. Almost all that time I've been in private practice in one firm or another, except for roughly 9 to 10 years, which I spent some with the Legislative Affairs Agency, some as an Assistant Attorney General, and for roughly 6 years as Attorney General. I'm here representing only myself. I am not a part of any lobby group. I have no clients involved in this. I am here strictly because I do not think this is a good bill. I read about it in the paper. I thought it was an exaggeration, so I went and got a copy of the bill and I read it. And then I went to the Senate hearing to see if whether I really understood the bill or not and listened to the testimony there. It was fairly brief, but I did get a chance to hear it. And I came to the conclusion that I did understand the bill, but judging from the testimony, there was a substantial amount of misinformation about it. This is a bill which was basically created to deal with a specific lawsuit against a company. I realize there are other people now interested in it. It's written in the language of lawsuits and legal doctrines, and many people are not intimately familiar with that kind of jargon. And I thought, with no axe to grind, no client, no nothing, I would come here and at least provide what assistance I could to the committee and at least giving them my views about what this bill is about. First, let me tell you what I think this bill is not about. Newspaper headlines notwithstanding, this bill has nothing to do with what are commonly known as nuisance or frivolous lawsuits. Okay, nuisance lawsuits are suit without any foundation that are filed to harass people, basically. And they're already prohibited in many, many ways. There are sanctions that can be imposed by a court for a nuisance suit. There's a tort you can sue people if they harass you. And attorneys that file nuisance suit can be, among other things, disciplined and ultimately disbarred. This bill is not about nuisance suits. It's about suits to abate a nuisance. That's a very different thing. And the nuisance is defined in this bill, of course, as it has been throughout history, because nuisance is a very ancient concept in our law. It's as old as property, really. As an unreasonable, not just any interference, but an unreasonable interference and a substantial interference with the property rights of another person, another individual, another business, another entity. Now, nuisance is a particular kind of interference. If you walk onto your neighbor's property, or you build your house across the property line on your neighbor's property, you physically interfere with his property. That's called a trespass. Everybody's familiar with that one. If you interfere with the same property by unreasonably fouling the air above the property, or by spoiling your neighbor's water supply, or if you create such loud noises or one thing or another that it's impossible, literally impossible, for your neighbor to live there anymore, then you've created a nuisance. You haven't physically walked on his property, you haven't physically intruded on it, but you have intruded on it in other ways. And that's what a nuisance is. Now, until this bill, every single property owner in the United States, to my knowledge, in every state, and I haven't done exhaustive research, but I did do some research because I got interested, every state has had the right to protect his property by filing a suit to abate a nuisance. And until now, it has never been the doctrine in any state in the United States that a person who's creating a nuisance somehow can defend his conduct by saying that he has a permit or what he's doing is lawful. And if you think about it, it's pretty obvious why this is so. First of all, nuisance permits have very little to do, if anything, with the potential for creating a nuisance. For instance, I got involved when I was an assistant AG, like a million years ago, back in the early 60s, with some problems people were having over anadromous fish streams, and whether you could get into anadromous fish streams and divert them and pollute them in one thing or another. There were a lot of mining activities going on then, for instance, where people were doing that. And so they wrote a law which required you to get a permit from the Commissioner of Fish and Game before you could, you know, do things like that. Right, so I went back, I was trying to remember this, and I dug it out. It was 1605-870. And what you do is if you want to, and I'm quoting here, pollute a stream, these are the words of the statute, right? You need a permit from the Commissioner of Fish and Game. The Commissioner of Fish and Game will give it to you if you have the plans and specifications sufficient for the proper protection of fish and game. That's why he gives you that permit. He can't deny it to you for any other reason. If you give him plans and specifications which are sufficient to protect the fish and game, then he is required to give you a permit. Now, so that permit obviously has nothing to do with whether or not you are creating a nuisance to the adjoining landowner, even though you now have it and you have a permit from the Department of Fish and Game to make up to pollute the water. That's what this says. The second thing is that if you think about it, permits have nothing to do with the actual damage that you may create. I'll give you an example from this community. It's very real here. There's a big dispute and discussion going on in this community over the reopening of the Echo Bay mine. And Echo Bay has spent literally millions of dollars trying to develop a system where they can discharge water and not hurt the water systems of the people in this community. They have done extensive studies, and they are prepared to come forward and prove that they will not do that, right? And on the basis of these studies and these commitments, they're going to get a permit, I assume, right? Now, suppose the studies that they have produced are wrong, and suppose that with this permit, water seeps or discharges seep down through the cracks, and it spoils the water system of 200 homes in this community. Let's hope that never happens, but let's assume for a moment it does. Of what benefit is it to the property owner who now has a valueless piece of property with no water system that Echo Bay had a permit to do what they did? I mean, the fact of the matter is that permits are achieved on the basis of assumptions and scientific data, which, if proved wrong, doesn't make any difference to the person who suffers the wrong. His property is still valueless. And the question is, what are you going to do about that? Are you going to immunize the people who've done it? You know, or are you going to do something for the property owner? This bill attempts to basically settle an existing lawsuit or get rid of an existing lawsuit by authorizing private property owners to commit nuisances. That's basically what this does. It says that if you get a permit, you are authorized to commit a nuisance. Now, I stress to you, this is not a development bill. This applies to businesses just as well as to private landowners. The person who runs a lodge can see his business destroyed, I mean, quickly, by somebody who creates a nuisance. This isn't an environmental bill. This is basically an anti-property right bill. You are taking private property rights away from people. You are authorizing the government to do that by issuing a permit to people or by passing a regulation to people. Now, until now, and I will expedite it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gross, we did limit to 2 minutes. So please continue, but please summarize.
2 minutes? Well, I will summarize it this way. Until now, the only way the government could take your property is for public purposes and by paying you money. That's the only way it could be done. Right? And if the government created a nuisance, the government in turn was liable to pay you, right? But it could only do so for public purposes. This bill authorizes private parties to take your property, right, without any compensation. It enhances their property at your expense, and if I'm limited to 2 minutes, I will conclude this way. I will assure you, I am not retained by a client. I will give you my free legal opinion, which somebody will tell you is worth exactly what you're paying for, but I will nonetheless give it to you. If you pass this bill, the state is going to be liable for this. The courts are not going to let you take private property, not let you issue permits or pass regulations to take private property, I mean, much less for private purposes, but certainly not let you take private property without paying for it. And if you're saying that the people who get the permit don't have to pay for it, that you're immunizing them with a state law, you're asking that the state pay for it. You are basically setting up a system where the state's going to pay for it. Now, don't take my word for it. Ask the AG about it if you don't believe me. But what I'm saying is this. Nobody knows what that liability is going to be. Nobody's investigated it. And I'll tell you one thing. That if the state is going to be liable, for those people who think that this is going to assist, you know, development, I ask you to consider the fact that if you are issuing permits and the state's going to be liable for them, how quickly are you going to issue the permits? I think what you're going to see is the state permitting process simply grind to a halt, while they simply have to sit there and try to investigate what the potential is for nuisance suit from every conceivable source, right? Which now the state's going to be liable for. Because now people don't have to worry about whether they're creating a nuisance. They're authorized to create a nuisance. So they no longer have to take their conduct and build it within certain boundaries. Mr. Chairman, if you allowed only 2 minutes, I've exceeded it, and I'm sorry I didn't realize that you had.
Question that I asked, certainly, preliminarily, may I ask, are you aware of the amendments that were made in the Senate?
Yes, I am. And to me, the Senate amendments are of absolutely no significance. I mean, to me, for one thing, they've now allowed one nuisance to be accepted, which is nuclear waste. I don't know why nuclear waste is any different than any other nuisance, except that maybe you glow instead of you die. You know what I mean? I'm serious. I mean, poisons in the water are equally bad as radiation in the air. That's one. And as far as the public hearing is concerned, the point I'm trying to make, Mr. Chairman, is the permit process I just read you for fishing game, it doesn't matter whether it's a public hearing or it's not a public hearing. The issuance of the permit has nothing to do with its impact on a neighboring property. The sole criteria for the issuance or grant or denial of a permit is the impact on fish and game. But it authorizes pollution. It authorizes a discharge into water. It authorizes one thing or another. Now, is that going to be used to justify creating a nuisance against human beings? I mean, under the bill it is.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gross, I appreciate your 2 minutes.
I'm sorry. I did not know that you were.
Well, it's not my rule, but I'm sorry about the rule. But I have two questions. Would you please comment on the idea that what this bill seems to do is to create some kind of private property out of public permits? The permit seems to allow people to hide behind the permitting process to accomplish something that they can't. I don't know how to ask the question, but the idea here is that it seems that permit is becoming property, because as we know in other parts of the country, if you have a permit to pollute, you can pollute a certain area if you show another area that you're saving, that you're not polluting it. This I forget what the legal term for that kind of thing is, but I'd like for you to comment on that. And secondly, one would think that a fiscal note would be in order from the court system, because it sounds like we're going to save an awful lot of money here.
Well, not only, I just want to stress something. You know, it's not only that the state is issuing the permits, over which you do have control. This bill immunizes permits which are issued under federal authority, right? So, I mean, the state is passing a law saying you can't sue somebody if they have a permit from some federal agency in Washington, D.C., and they use that permit and they pollute your property. The state is prohibiting you from seeking redress. So the person they're going to come back against is going to be the state. It's not going to be the federal government. The federal government didn't authorize you to create a nuisance when it issued a permit. That's not the law anywhere, except if this bill passes. And if this bill passes, it will be the state which is setting up the immunity system, and it's going to be the state that's going to be liable. It could be very expensive. This isn't some phantom idea. I mean, as I say, up till now, people have had to watch what they've done with permits. But under this bill, once you get one, you can do anything you want, basically. I mean, and you're immune. You don't have. On the other thing, permits are often property rights, Mr. Davidson. It depends on the nature of the permit, of course, and how it can be revoked. But the difference between permits generally and permits under this bill is that the permit under generally authorizes you to do a specific act. It doesn't say, you know, whether it's going to create a nuisance to somebody, like a burning permit. You got a burning permit in the national forest. You know, you can burn and burn and burn and burn. There's no problem as long as you don't burn down the national forest. But if you happen to be doing it next to a fishing lodge, and you do it day and night, and the smoke keeps creeping in the windows and going in the windows, and the guy says, you can't do that. The law up in every other place is you can. Under this bill, you can. So that's why it changes permits.
My other question, as a former attorney general, you certainly know what the cost would be in the court. Do we save money or through the court process, and why wouldn't we have a court fiscal note in this
bill? You obviously have lawsuits over this, but you could conceivably have nuisance suit right now. But what you will have is much more extensive permit procedures. I mean, no state agency in its right mind is going to issue a permit now which exposes the state to liability for all conceivable nuisance which can result from the permit, however the person wants to use it, without exhaustive and extensive hearings as to what's involved, what could possibly occur. And my gosh, permits take long enough to get now, as you know, the people involved in this proceeding I'm sure can tell you. I mean, without shifting that. I suppose what I'm trying to say is, I understand that the people in Sitka have a problem, and I understand that the pulp mill has a problem, but you don't have to turn the whole civil justice system on its head, you know, to deal with that problem. I mean, they're capable of defending themselves. They have a real good legal staff, and it's a big corporation, and I'm sure they can handle it. You know, and they don't need a whole change in the nuisance law of the state of Alaska to deal with that, because it's got terrible ramifications.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you for getting me in, Mr.
I'm told that we are reconnected with the teleconference circuit. We left when the line went down. Nancy Lefko in the middle of her testimony. Nancy, are you still there, and would you please continue?
I'm still here, and I'm not sure where I lost you. I'd like to thank the committee for the very interesting discussion we just listened to.
Well, as this suit has been described and trying to conclude, we'll give you a second bite out of the apple. Why don't you just go ahead?
I'm not sure. Should I just briefly run through my testimony again?
You bet. Yes, please do that.
Okay. The Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association is opposed to this bill. We have encountered two problems with the permitting process, the public process that this bill addresses. And basically the first is that we feel permits, particularly air quality permits, are often issued using data provided by the industry. The state's declining income means that DEC and other regulators are going to be able to do less and less independent checking of information provided by industry. More permits may or will be issued under the pressure of economic constraints that may or will lead to damage to personal property. This would be our lodges, our other businesses that our members have. The second one is that in the public process, the hearings are very unequal. Industry lawyers meet privately with regulators from the local to the commissioner level during the permitting process. We do not object. In fact, it is good that industry have an opportunity to work together with DEC and other regulators. However, citizens whose property may or will be affected often are unaware of how their property might be affected. They do not have the scientific expertise, they do not have the lawyers, they do not have the funds, they do not have time or access to the regulators to put forth their position. So our business members are very concerned about this unequal process. They hope that DEC be able to monitor the permits, but unfortunately DEC's budget is being cut, so once they issue a permit based on industry information, that sometimes it is trying new technology, such as in the case of the PetroStar refinery here in Valdez, where there is a legitimate difference of opinion over just exactly how much emissions of what type are going to go up. DEC is not monitoring it because of lack of funding. If there are damages from a facility that hurt a tourism business, for example, a lodge, etc., the only recourse for our members is through the courts. And we believe that this bill takes that recourse away. And we think it's a very bad bill from certainly our economic perspective. We believe that the polluter should be responsible for his pollution and not the recipient of the pollution. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak again.
Thank you. I will return here to Juno and ask if Risa Gerald, I think she just came in, is ready to testify. Risa, would you check the switch? We're back on telephone.
173.
I'm sorry you are, and I'm sorry that we're not doing that one right now.
Nor
in our lifetime. Okay, next in Juneau, Bob Lesher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Could you see if the switch is on there, Bob?
Apologize in advance. My testimony is going to be a little ragged because I've just recently learned of this bill. So bear with me, if you will. My name is Bob Lesher. I represent seven homeowners on Lisiaski Inlet near Pelican. We all own substantial parcels of beachfront property outside any local government. Some of us are expanding into tourism as economic opportunity to maintain economic stability since commercial fishing has been seriously damaged by recent laws, regulations, and treaties. Regardless of economics, we have spent over 10 years developing this land for the unique quality of pristine lifestyle this area provides. We're opposed to this Senate Bill 178, specifically sections 1B1, 1B2, 1C, and section 2. Our opposition to this bill is based upon what we see as a threat to our right to protect our property and lifestyle. Let's examine the proposed legislation. First, on the objectionable sections of 1B and C. A person may not maintain an action under this section if the occupation, structure, or act, including an emission or discharge, but excluding the placement of nuclear waste that is subject to the action, is authorized by and is not in violation of a term or condition of statute or regulation, a license, permit, or order issued after public hearing by the state or federal government. The provisions of the above section does not apply to actions regarding a nuisance in area zoned as residential by a city, borough, or municipality regarding view, odor, or noise. We object to these sections for the following reasons. Many activities may be legal under statute or regulation but could be harmful to one's property rights. In our case, such activities would include, but not limited to, the legal discharge of firearms on a regular basis. Put yourselves in our homes. Would you accept people discharging weapons on tide lands immediate to your homes? The inherent danger and trauma is just not acceptable. Beach parties in front of our homes would be legal. Give abuse a window of opportunity and it will happen. Alcohol will be consumed, people will become intoxicated, conduct will be both dangerous and obscene. Again, not necessarily illegal, but would we tolerate this? Anchoring of derelict vessels in our cove. This action could be precipitated with the same mentality as vehicle abandonment, a means to sidestep financial and social responsibility at the expense of others. Many licenses, permits, or orders are issued after public hearings where there is very limited notice of the hearing. Some examples are the solid waste disposal permit, DEC, public hearing only if public comment warrants, published notice in two consecutive local newspapers, discharge of dredged or filled materials into U.S. waters, Department of Army permit. A public hearing will be held if there is sufficient interest. By no means is this an inclusive list of permits requiring public hearings. It's an example that some hearings may be very brief, some may be discretionary depending upon interest. We are concerned with the possibility we may miss being notified of a hearing due to any number of reasons, emergencies, business travels, vacations. Not all hearings are as extensive or as well advertised as the AJ Mine hearings in this area. We do not believe a brief hearing of a few days or less deserves the privilege of denying property owners the right to ask for an abatement of the offending activity in civil court. This bill in 1C allows nuisance suits for persons residing in a residential zoned area of a city, borough, or municipality. Myself and those I represent all live, as stated, outside a local government unit. We question the constitutionality of this act. Why aren't we receiving equal protection under this law? Our property rights are just as important to us as people within urban areas or other local government units. These are our main objections to the first section of the proposed law. All we are asking for is equal protection and the opportunity to defend our rights. This legislation has a further objectionable section where the legal term nuisance is defined. Section 2 states AS 945 is amended by adding a new section to Article 4 to read Section 945, 255, definition. Nuisance means substantial and unreasonable interference with the use or enjoyment of real property, including water. We object to the tightening of the definition of nuisance. Current law 230, action to abate or enjoin private nuisance, defines nuisance as an action may be brought by a person whose property is injuriously affected or whose personal enjoyment is lessened by a public nuisance. As anyone can see, the present definition of nuisance gives the private property owner much greater right to exclusion of outside interference than does the proposed definition. why is this legislature even considering reducing the property rights of the individual? We have worked as hard as any Alaskan to own our properties. Now the legislature is considering taking action against those that they should be protecting. It is obvious that the purpose of this legislation is to prevent civil suits from stopping or delaying industry projects that have gone through permitting process. We would suggest that Senate Bill 178 is not the answer. It does too much harm to individual property rights. A more palatable approach would be to extend industry some sort of relief after they have indeed gone through adequate public hearings. After all, these are examples we've heard that justify this bill. A project that has received, as an example, 5 calendar days of public hearings could be protected from civil action to stop the project. This type of legislation would better protect the individual property owner and at the same time protect those projects that have received adequate public testimony. If Senate Bill 178 should be passed and enacted into law, it could cost the state. As individual property owners, be assured, we would look to the option of bringing suit against the state for not providing equal protection, not protecting private property rights, and for depriving the individual of existing rights without compensation. I am begging the members of this committee to view Senate Bill 178 as language extending extreme damage inadvertently and beyond legislative intent. Thanks for allowing this testimony.
Well, I have to say, if that was thrown together in ragged, I would love to hear you when you're prepared. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Next, Douglas Mertz.
Chairman, members of the committee, I have provided some written testimony, and I won't repeat that, and former Attorney General Gross has stated more eloquently than I could many of the points that I would make anyway, so I'm going to be fairly summary with you. This bill is a bad idea because it would basically cut off the rights of property owners to protect their own property, and that extends to all types of property owners, not just residential property owners, commercial property owners, industrial property owners, public property owners, charitable property owners, churches, the whole gamut. It is clear to me, as someone who has been involved for years with the regulatory and permitting process in the Attorney General's office, that you cannot substitute the permitting or regulation-making process for the right of someone to go to court to protect his property rights. Regulations and permits are written in general terms to protect general public interest. They are not written to provide protection for all types of property and all types of circumstances. The requirement of a public hearing before a nuisance type activity is immunized also does not substantially help here. What about the permit process that doesn't have a public hearing attached? And many permits don't have public hearing requirements. What about the property owner who lives in Barrow when the public hearing is held in Juneau? What about the property owner who just doesn't happen to read the Anchorage Daily News classified sections on the day the public hearing is announced? Or the property owner who happens to be in the hospital during the public hearing? Or the property owner who buys the property after a public hearing, but before the offensive activity takes place. Those people have no ability to use the permitting or regulatory process to protect their property, and yet this bill would cut off their right to use the judicial system to protect their property. That's why it's a bad policy. It's also bad law. It would subject the court, the state, to damages for takings, and an important point to remember here is that our condemnation provision in the state constitution is a little unusual. Unlike most states, it doesn't simply require compensation for takings of property. It requires compensation for takings and damages by the state to private property.